Hey guys, it's Lauren, hopping on before the episode starts to tell you about new tour dates. That's right, West Coast Tour Unlocked. We will be in San Francisco on June 16th. That's Father's Day, and our fathers will be there, guys. June 17th, we'll be in Portland, and June 18th, we will be in Seattle. And I'm sure the LA fuckettes are like, where is the Los Angeles date? Guys, it is coming. Do not worry. And let's not sleep on our East Coast tour. We will be in Boston April 18th. We are doing two shows April 20th in New York. There are still a select amount of tickets available for the 10-15 show. We will be in Washington, D.C. April 21st, my birthday, Philadelphia April 22nd, Pittsburgh April 23rd, and Chicago April 25th. For those coming to the East Coast dates, you guys will have access to our upcoming merch that won't even be on sale to the general public until we're back in May. So we hope to see you, and if we have not announced your city or country yet, we're probably coming to you eventually. And without further ado, here's today's episode.
$40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Coral, the thing.
Great gown. Coral, beautiful gown.
Fashion has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit Podcast. Chel, how are you?
I'm good. Same old, same old. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling a tad embarrassed. We are recording at your place today. And as I was driving up, I was like, oh, Tat's on the street. And I waved and I waved. And no reaction from Tatiana. And I was like, that's weird. Oh, you know what? I'm still in my rental. Maybe she doesn't know it's me. And then as I got closer, I realized that wasn't Tad. I just waved to a stranger.
Was it like the old man that lives across the street?
You think I confused an old man with Tatiana?
I just know my neighbors. Was it the insta-gay next door?
No, because when I told this story to Tad, as I walked through the door, she was like, was it a man? And I went, no, guys, it was a woman with short hair that had the same profile and build as Tad, with a backwards hat and black sweats.
Where is this dyke?
Inquiring minds want to know.
Seriously, shall we just get into it? Because we have a lot of juicy things.
And just like that, Karen Pittman is out.
She's a great actor. She had very good chemistry with Cynthia Nixon, but her storylines always felt like an afterthought. And she really didn't get that much screen time in this second season.
And she is also actively on two other shows, which is what was in the statement from Variety, which is due to her commitment to two other streamer series, it has become apparent that filming three shows at once isn't possible. Karen and Naya will be missed, and her Max family and fans will all be cheering her on in her next endeavors.
Well, our criticism has always been that there's too many characters, so unless they're going to replace her with like three more characters, I don't know.
It's very possible. Right, the whole idea to add the three supporting characters when In Just Like That came back was to give a best friend to each of the three girls. But now with Che not coming back, Nia Wallace not coming back, and LTW basically being the Samantha stand-in, can the series finally begin again?
Seema and LTW felt more Sex in the City always, so it makes sense that they are the ones that would remain.
I fucking forgot about Seema. Holy shit, they added four characters.
Yeah, well, Che's like a love interest, so I don't think they really count in the same way, although they are a series regular and they had more screen time than anyone else, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it is worth noting that Nia Wallace was originally meant to be Miranda's love interest, which would have been an infinitely more interesting storyline. That did not pan out. So the other two shows that Karen Pittman is on, she's been on The Morning Show since 2019, which is a show my mother says is quite good.
I watched the first season, but I couldn't do the second season. But I hear Reese Witherspoon is a lesbian, so maybe I should.
And interestingly enough, I was like, what is this other show that she's on? And she has been on the recently announced Netflix adaptation of Judy Blume's Forever. Did you ever read that?
No, I was never a big Judy Blume person.
I remember reading that in elementary school, like older elementary school, but I was way too young to be reading it. And this jarred a memory where I was out with my mother and I ran into someone she knew. And the woman was like, what are you reading? I said, Judy Blume's Forever. And she just got like very weirded out and walked away. And my mom was like, what is that book? And I was like, oh, I guess she's like weird because about like a woman's sexual awakening. And then my mom was like, oh, okay.
You would have said that as like a 10-year-old.
But also my mom, the very cool person she was like, oh, okay, whatever.
Well, also like, what an uptight bitch. That's crazy. So you're enough of a perv to know the book I'm talking about.
Right, right. But will still shame me in public.
What else?
Euphoria has been delayed indefinitely. Despite Sydney Sweeney saying Euphoria was going back into production in a few short months, the highly anticipated third season of the show has now been delayed indefinitely. Delayed so long that they've released the actors and are allowing them to take other jobs. So this is good news for indie prestige films that were looking to go into production this summer, because Sydney Sweeney, Zendaya, Jacob Elordi, Hunter Schafer, and Colman Domingo are all available.
Euphoria is major, and it sucks that like they just like won't make more, like can't get it together. And now I feel like it's really never going to happen.
It's specifically one person. It's Sam Levinson. Because according to The Hollywood Reporter, this new delay is in part due to the fact that the show creator Sam Levinson and HBO recently had a discussion about how the show would be following the characters after high school. And they both mutually agreed that they, quote, needed more time to hash out this new world. I feel like when season two ended, which, by the way, season two premiered in 2022. Didn't we know that it was going to take place, that there was going to be a time jump? I feel like that was widely known. So for HBO to be like, oh shit, they're maybe adults now, we need more time.
Yeah, that is weird. I assumed they would be in college and it would be like a, you know, when they went to college in Dawson's Creek situation, but more fucked up. But now, because this isn't happening, all of these actors are just getting more and more famous. They can do a high school reunion thing in like 10 years.
That would be good. I mean, by the time Sam Levinson's ready to go into production, it might be 10 years.
It might be there's 20 years.
It is worth noting that he has had 2 years to write this season, because season three was supposed to go into production last March. Then that got delayed to last May, which was upended by the writers and actors strike. Then Agnes Cloud died. But in November of last year, HBO announced that the show was going to come back in 2025. I get it. Writing is hard. No writer wants to write. Why do you think I podcast?
Well, I think that he's probably written like 50 different scripts during this time, and just like none of them have worked for whatever reason. Like, I don't think he just like hasn't written it. I feel like whatever he's written is like too fucked up for anyone to want to make, especially after The Idol.
Well, yes, he was busy on two shows at one point.
Because after The Idol, HBO then can't be like, okay, we're going to give you complete creative control, because that would be psychotic.
Although this isn't surprising, because if you remember, Euphoria is a show that's been on since 2019, but only has 18 episodes. Because he rewrote season two during the pandemic. He completely scrapped a season that he wrote fully to rewrite it. I don't doubt that he has not been writing the past few years. I think he just keeps changing it, which is also fine, because what would life even look like for them outside of high school? Like, as someone that grew up in the heyday of WB and Fox shows, it's always been brutal when the high school characters go to college, whether it's 90210 or Buffy, or as you said, Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, and there's a certain edginess of presenting this sort of like very dark, very sexual, violent subject matter with teens. Like, that gives it sort of Skins vibes. Yeah. And you can't have Skins vibes with like whole ass adults. It just hits different. You don't want kids with 40-year-olds. And by kids, I mean the Larry Clark film Kids.
You can't be a drug mule and have a part-time fast food job. It, like, doesn't work.
I'm just concerned about everyone's fame level, because, like, I can understand why Zendaya would come back, even though she's very famous, because she's the lead, because this is a critically acclaimed role for her. But, like, Jacob Elordi and Sydney Sweeney are now, like, lead actors in movies. Like, they are getting too famous to play supporting roles. And if I learned anything from watching Saltburn and Priscilla, it's like, oh, Jacob Elordi was very underutilized on Euphoria. His riz was almost taken from him because that character was such a sadistic freak.
I think that Sydney Sweeney and Jacob Elordi have enough respect that they are where they are because of him, that they would come back. But good luck trying to get these people all available at the same time again for the rest of this calendar year. I would like to also remind people that Euphoria is put out by HBO, which is owned by Warner Brothers Discovery. David Zaslav is the head of, and
these are your favorite kinds of facts to share, I've noticed.
That was all a preamble to say this. This man has wholesale shelved and deleted multiple films before they've ever been released. Why won't he cancel this show? Like, I understand that it is popular and it wins awards, but it is so expensive.
To me, it's encouraging that he hasn't, because if Euphoria was canceled, I would be quite upset. But with Euphoria, I feel like at this point, they should probably just do a movie to wrap it up.
Ooh, that's good.
Expecting all of these like very famous people to like not shoot a movie for 6 months so they can get like not that much screen time on Euphoria just seems like crazy to me.
Oh, I've heard from production people, it's not just 6 months. It's like, we'll let you know when it's done. I mean, he shoots for 10 months, almost a year, is the other thing.
Well, also, like, when you hear what people were saying about how brutal filming some of those night scenes were, it's like these people have come back from war, basically.
3 weeks of night shoots will turn you into a crazy person.
Anyway, hopefully Euphoria comes back in some form at some time.
I wonder how he's going to end the show, because the Zendaya character has always been a version of him. I mean, this is based on his own drug experiences in high school and in his early 20s. So I do wonder if it's going to mirror his adult life, and her character
is a little Sofia Coppola. I would love that.
Look, guys, if this season never ends up coming out, Chelsea and I will just do an audio play of our own fan fiction about what we think season 3 would be.
There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. That's why I'm excited to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multi-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions. I personally have fallen out of love with a 20-step skincare routine. I'll leave that for the preteens. Honestly, I've realized the less complicated, the better. OneSkin really is science-backed skincare. They combine tissue engineering, data analysis, and cutting-edge longevity science to create the world's most effective product to target skin aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS-01 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. Also, their packaging is so minimal and chic. I'm in love. I've been using their cleanser as well as their OS-01 face topical supplement for a minute now. And honestly, I've been leaning on it heavily on this tour. It has kept my skin plump and glowing when really, I'm just haggard and very tired. But don't just take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code OUTFIT at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code OUTFIT. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. You've heard me talk about my love of Quince before, how they transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Are you like me, and now that the temperatures are getting warmer, you're looking to upgrade your summer wardrobe? Perhaps with a premium European linen dress, blouse, and short, or maybe a washable silk top? Personally, I've had my eye on this linen scoop neck midi dress in black gingham. With Quince, the dress is a fraction of the cost it would be anywhere else. How do they do this, you may ask? Well, Quince pairs directly with top factories. They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to all of us. Honestly, there's so much good stuff in their new linen collection. There's also this linen strapless top that's giving season 2 Carrie vibes. A must get, in my opinion. There's also a pajama set that's giving the perfect spring work from home vibes, if your work is being a degenerate podcaster like me. Wow, this is just turning into my own personal wish list from Quince. Best yet, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Quince has it all. Clothing, home goods, jewelry that are timeless at an unbeatable price. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/outfit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/outfit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/outfit.
Shall we move on to fashion?
Are you okay?
About which thing that happened? There's been so much news this week that we actually bumped fashion up. We usually prioritize movies and TV.
The fact that Dries is retiring, are you okay?
Like, I'm not upset that, like, this man that has been working since the 80s, like, finally wants to get off of the fashion hamster wheel. Like, that makes sense. He's said everything that he's needed to say. He's created a very specific look and done iterations of that look for decades at this point. But it's sad because it's just, he's one of those people that isn't replaceable.
So for those who have no idea what the fuck we're talking about, Dries Van Noten announced his retirement, which I realize I did not know what this man looked like. Oh my goodness, a very handsome 65-year-old.
Oh yeah, he can get it.
He said, "My dream was to have a voice in fashion. That dream came true." Very Anne Hathaway when she won her Oscar. "I want to shift my focus to all the things I never had time for."
Good for him.
Did you know, Chelsea, that he is a passionate gardener? This was in the New York Times article about this. And he often goes on garden tours with Anne de Mulemeester.
I love that for them. I hope they replace him with someone that's worked with him. Because that's one of those brands that it's like, they really should just do the same thing.
The article also says he would remain involved in the brand, though did not specify the role. I think he saw with his friend Anne de Mulemeester and her retirement of like, I better stay on and have a little bit of a hand in who might replace me because this could go badly.
Well, with Anne, it worked for a while. It's like, again, they replaced her with someone that worked under her. But like, it's, you know, clearly now the wheels have, what's the expression?
The wheels have come off?
Yeah, whatever. The wheels have come off. The wagon wheels are off, guys. Okay, moving on. More shocking news this week. So much shocking news this week. First, the news that Pierpaolo leaving Valentino.
I think it's especially shocking because of how abrupt it was when you consider the fact that he's been at Valentino since 1999, which is not something I guess I ever really knew, was how long he had been at the label. He started in the accessories department. He and Maria Grazia were co-designers, co-creative directors since 2008. Then he took over solo, and after 25 years, he's out.
He was doing very good work there. I think a handful of the Valentino shows from like when he was there on his own are among the best of that decade. But that said, it's like he's very good at gowns and evening wear. But like whenever I go into a Valentino store, I'm like, this sucks. The shoes, the bags, I still associate it with the rock stud sandal. And the clothes like that aren't, you know, like, I don't know, $30,000 gowns, I don't connect with. But I get that it's not for me. It's for, you know, older Italian women.
No, but as we've discussed many times before, I mean, quite like the film industry that is focused on IP and guaranteed hits, a lot of these fashion labels, really, no matter how large you are really about handbags, sunglasses, shoes. That is really their profit center.
Well, they definitely sell shoes because I still see people in the shoes, but I don't really see people with handbags ever.
Now more than ever, there really is a focus on like, we gotta have an it bag.
So they've replaced him with Alessandro Michele, which makes sense. There was maybe how many days lapsed between him stepping down and this announcement? Like, it couldn't have been more than a week.
It was less than a week. Women's Wear Daily had the exclusive. And at the time last Friday, they were like, Alessandro Michele is in talks to join. But he was in talks to join that other funky Italian.
Oh, the Walter Albini.
Walter Albini, exactly. But I didn't really pay any mind to that because they have put Alessandro Michele as being the head or rumored to be the head of several different fashion labels that never materialized. Although this makes a lot of sense.
But it just made me wonder, like, what is Valentino's actual thought about this? Because I can't imagine that he would like a lot of what he was doing at Gucci.
Oh, the man.
Yeah, like this is a man that like never cared about androgyny, doesn't care about like any subcultural fashions unless you consider like very wealthy older Italian women to be a subculture.
And I do.
I'm just curious how much of that he's going to bring to this. Because Pierpaolo like kept it very much within his vision of what this brand is.
It's true. I mean, with Alessandro Michele, you're going to have the first designer at the House of Valentino that hasn't interacted with the man. Although I guess the vice president or president of Valentino worked with Alessandro Michele at Gucci. So that's sort of the connection point.
Well, I'm sure it'll be fabulous. But I kind of wish that, like, he went to a house that actually needed help. I would have been fine with Pier Paolo just staying at Valentino forever and doing his thing. There's so many brands that are just like full charity cases at this point. I thought they were doing reasonably well.
It's also interesting that Alessandro Michele would take such a high profile post at another big Italian fashion house, just because everything that we've heard from Gucci was he basically didn't want to play ball with the new mandate for what Gucci should look like. Do you think all of Alessandro Michele's muses are coming over? Like, are they breaking their Gucci contracts?
I hope we do like a totally different vibe, because if it's Jared Leto and Florence and the Machine again, I feel like that will be boring. Yeah, I feel bad for Pier Paolo. I honestly feel like this is so rude. If you were to ask me, like, who are the fashion designers that have the best sense of color, I would have said him and Dries. So it's really weird that, like, this week it's like they're both
gone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pier Paolo, I'm sure, will get another job elsewhere. But it just goes to show, like, how psychotic these brands are. Like, they only care about profits, but it's like they're going to end up fucking themselves by having this mindset.
You know, in the meantime, we always have that amazing video from the Heavenly Bodies Met show where it's Pier Paolo and Frances McDormand dancing. In more bad news, Matches went bankrupt in the week that we weren't recording.
RIP, the site is still live. Apparently, it's closing in 2 months. I've yet to see a liquidation sale materialize.
Yeah, not to dance in Matches' ashes, but like, what kind of sale are we talking about? Are we talking about more like a stingy 10%, or like, are we talking about a 70% sale at some point?
They really did something with those marbled boxes.
Yeah, I didn't realize how fucked the company was, basically. I just assume all e-commerce sites are doing relatively well.
Yeah, like, how can Matches be not doing well? I literally don't get it.
At one point, they were valued at $1 billion, but I guess recently, a company called the Frasers Group bought them for $66 million, and just 2 months later, they announced that it would be shutting down.
Of the e-commerce sites, Essence is my favorite in terms of the clothes that they have. But like, their customer service is like crazy. Matches, I feel like the buy had much more of a perspective than like Net-a-Porter. And by the way, guys, I do know that it's Net-a-Porter, but there's something in me that can't do a French pronunciation for a brand that like isn't even from France. Anyway.
Also in this Business of Fashion article, the Frasers Group bought them because they wanted to increase their position in luxury. Amongst the multitude of problems Matches had, they discovered designers were severing ties with them because they had not received payments in months.
In other fucked up news, Supreme did a collaboration with MM6 this week, which I was very excited about, although it's, of course, all menswear, right? There's not a lot of stuff that I would buy. The one thing I wanted was this wig. There was apparently like a combination of synthetic hair and human hair, and it was like vacuum sealed in like a branded plastic pouch. $1,400, Lauren.
But it's Supreme. Is that surprising to you?
Yes, that's an insane price for a wig.
And doesn't it look fucked as well?
Like, you're not getting the wig to actually wear the wig.
Yeah, Chell, think of it as an art object.
I can't spend $1,400 on an art object right now, unfortunately.
You have limits.
I have limits, exactly. Someone actually called into the hotline and was like, you guys never talk about MM6. What do you think about it? And I don't know. I have mixed feelings generally. Like, on one hand, I feel like they do have some very good pieces from time to time. But on the other hand, I feel like sometimes it can be a little too obvious. Like, I feel like Margiela is a brand about, like, subtlety. But anyway, this is smart for them because they should have more, like, hype beasts that are into MM6.
You just won't be one of them.
Again, I'm not a hater. It's a mixed bag of wigs.
Speaking of mixed bags, should we talk about Vanessa Friedman's profile of Phoebe Philo?
I very much enjoyed this profile. Interviewing Phoebe Philo must be like getting blood from a rock.
It reminded me a lot of the taffy profile she did of Bradley Cooper around the time of A Star Is Born, where Bradley Cooper tells her outright that he's not going to talk about himself.
Well, she clearly like doesn't want to give interviews.
But here's my issue with this article is Vanessa Friedman, I guess you have to come at it with some sort of angle, but her angle is how private Phoebe Philo is. But she submits to interviews when she was at Celine and Chloe. She would walk out and do the bow. When she's at public events with her husband, she takes photographs with him. Like, what exactly about her is so ultra private?
She's ultra private now. She wasn't always. She used to be on magazine covers and shit.
No, but I feel like she's as public facing as a public figure would be in the 80s and 90s. I just feel like because she's not Victoria Beckham doing like 73 questions, that she's a private person.
Yeah, but we just haven't heard from her that much for the last like 8 years, something like that.
Which I think is a good business decision.
Well, she did fall off the face of the earth for much of that time. And by fall off the face of the earth, I mean she just wasn't working.
I mean, work.
Yeah, goals. Like, she's accomplished so much, she has nothing more to prove.
She gives this quote where she says, "There may have been an expectation that I could have provided everything to everyone immediately, and that's just not possible. It takes time and effort to make most things and have meaning. One has to stand for something." The criticism of her that she falsely created a scarcity model with the pre-order, where she goes on to explain, like, I don't want to make an excess of product that then gets liquidated. I don't want to be part of that cycle anymore.
That makes complete sense from a business standpoint. And the prices, it's just like, it's not like it's like more expensive than most luxury brands. I just don't understand why people care so much when it comes to her specifically. I think maybe it's because it's minimalism and people don't understand the difference between like a black sweater from Uniqlo and a black sweater from The Row.
There is something lovely to learn that all of these women who we think are incredibly cool who have teenage daughters, their teenage daughters don't think they're shit at all.
Okay, that was actually upsetting to me though. Like, that didn't make me feel good. I was like, you nasty little bitch. You don't even see what is right in front of your eyes. Come on, that's horrible. I also love to know that she is friends with Bella Freud and that they go on long walks together but never talk about fashion.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting quotes in this article. I thought this quote about her process, which is, she has never wanted to give people what they want, or rather, she does want to please, but not in the way you would expect to be pleased.
I mean, that's any good designer, right? Because you can easily give people what's already popular.
The other thing I love that she talks about, which I think sort of deflated Vanessa Friedman's profile of her, which is understandable, is the fact that Phoebe Philo is like, I don't like a lot of storytelling in fashion.
She has a very pragmatic approach across the board. Also, we didn't talk about the amazing campaign with Sandra Hüller, our fave. And when I saw that, I was like, see, I knew that Phoebe Philo was into a Miranda type bitch. She is that. She is art house Miranda.
Yeah, and they seem very similarly minded, having seen how Sandra Hüller talks to the American press about acting and the way that Phoebe Philo talks about fashion. Sometimes a trouser is just a trouser. It's not a reflection of the economic climate right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very cool and intuitive pairing. Shall we get into movies?
Let's do it. You guys have been asking us, and yes, we finally saw Love Lies Bleeding.
Yes, we did.
I was trying to think about a non-spoiler kind of elevator pitch for this movie. And what I came up with is a roid rage romance against the Southwestern desert.
I would describe it as an action comedy with lesbians. And one of the lesbians is like the Incredible Hulk.
I love this movie. I love films about criminals who aren't particularly great at being criminals.
Yeah, I loved the tone of it because I expected it to be more bound, like more of a serious crime thriller with the kind of erotic lesbian element to it. It's much more comedic. There's a lot of gross out humor in it. It's kind of like Farrelly Brothers, like Nickelodeon people getting slimed vibes at times.
It's Bound meets like Raising Arizona. But then also what I wasn't expecting is there are elements of magical realism
that I think are great. It was surprising. And it was a mash of so many different genres, but I think it worked. I think it had a strong perspective.
And strong performances by everyone. Kristen Stewart, who this feels like the most Kristen Stewart has ever been in a movie.
Well, I mean, Runaways also felt very Kristen Stewart, but definitely among her best lesbian roles, for sure.
Dave Franco was incredible as her brother-in-law. Ed Harris just being a real weirdo.
Ed Harris was very much like a bootleg Quentin Tarantino character. Like, it was that kind of humor. I feel like Quentin Tarantino always, like, has a very... There's always highly specific hairstyles with a lot of these villains, and he definitely had that. 90% of watching this movie is, like, you just can't not look at Katie O'Brien's body. Like, not in an erotic way necessarily, but it's just like so crazy to see a woman with a physique like that.
Well, she is a former bodybuilder.
Yeah. But to me, it's just like the most crazy looking thing. And throughout the movie, she gets more and more buff because, spoiler alert, she does steroids.
Yeah. This is a film that says doing steroids is an act of love.
I also love this movie because it's a good lesbian movie, but it also like kind of drags lesbians in a funny way, like the whole tennis court scene. Like, it's very much like an extreme version of like a toxic lesbian relationship and how that plays out.
Yeah, it's hard not to get into spoilers, so I will just discuss my favorite character, who is the girl that is in love with Kristen Stewart, who is Anna Baryshnikov.
Yes. Mikhail Baryshnikov's daughter. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant comedic performance. It's kind of the vibe of like a Billy Lord character. It's in that world for sure, but she plays this crazed woman who is obsessed with Kristen Stewart and has a huge crush on her, but she has like rotted out teeth.
This film is set in the 80s in Albuquerque. I know this because I saw it with Paul, who is from Albuquerque, and he's just like the dad in My Big Fat Greek Wedding, but about New Mexico facts. So it was just sort of like New Mexico pop-up video while I was watching the film. He goes, that street goes to where I grew up. And I go, it is pitch black in this scene. How do you know that?
Also, I don't care.
It's so good. People should go see it. It is written and directed by Rose Glass. I now want to go back and watch her directorial debut, St. Maud. A wonderfully weird voice. And I don't mean to be like derivative 90s film bro, but like, it is a female take on a Coen Brothers Tarantino film. There's no better way to kind of describe the tone of it.
It is the lesbian bodybuilder film you've always wanted. Also, Jenna Malone's in it, and we love her. A sad character. One thing about this movie that's weird is that it has a lot of very heavy themes in it, yet it's also a very lighthearted romp through the desert.
With very serious consequences. Oh, we should give you the warning that you gave me, which is trigger warning. There's a lot of
vomiting, shit,
body secretions.
Yeah, just goo.
All right. Well, I finally saw Dune 2.
Okay, but did you like Dune 1? I didn't see Dune 1.
I'm going to reveal something not chill. I watched Dune 1 after I watched Dune 2.
Why?
I don't know. That's just how I did it.
How did that work for you?
It worked fine. Before I get into my thoughts about the film, I just want to talk about the experience of seeing it in IMAX. Because in short, I didn't love seeing it in IMAX. And I know that makes me a terrible like film bra to be like, IMAX kind of sucks, but if you are literally not dead center in the 5 or 6 rows towards the top, everything looks a little warped.
Yeah, but like, you know, Hakuna Matata. Is that the end of the world? Like, you went into an IMAX theater, that's how they are.
By the way, I got the last 2 seats. This film is so successful that it literally at Universal was booked the entire weekend, the 70mm IMAX experience. But I did spend the entire time sort of leaning to the right.
Look, I love a weird movie-going experience. I saw Barbie with, like, closed captioning randomly.
Yeah, we saw it together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right, you were there.
But Dune is a visual feast, but my 2 thoughts watching it was, God, this book is so weird. And two, holy shit, George Lucas stole almost everything from Dune for Star Wars.
I would react more if I understood what you were talking about.
The Lukes in the audience understand this. I did see a tweet that's just like, man, now that I've seen Dune, I can't enjoy Star Wars anymore because now I realize he took everything from Dune. Spoilers for a book that is literally 50 to 60 years old and has had now multiple film and TV adaptations. The movie ends with Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides essentially having his full Michael Corleone Breaking Bad moment, where he uses religious fanaticism to basically start a holy war to avenge his father's death. So it really feels like George Lucas read Dune in 65 and was like, what if Paul was the hero? You should see it because the costumes are very fucking major. I think you can jump to part two only for the fact that Austin Butler is in part two and not part one.
Okay. That is a selling point.
Kudos to director Denis Villeneuve for going like full weirdo for the Harkonnen planet. That's the Austin Butler planet that Stellan Skarsgård is also on. You've seen him in the fat suit in the jacuzzi of black goo.
I do not know what you speak of.
He's in a jacuzzi of black goo. For reasons. Luke's, no need to DM me. I've watched many YouTube videos. Here's the thing. I watched the film, probably will never watch it again, but I did spend the entire weekend on YouTube listening to synopses of the other Dune books. Because let me tell you, Chell, they get real weird. Way weirder.
Well, are they making more of these? Are there going to be like 20?
They're supposedly making the sequel, Dune Messiah, which Frank Herbert wrote because people were like, oh my God, Paul's a hero. And he was like, no, this was my cautionary tale about charismatic leaders. Fuck, I gotta write a sequel that really proves that point. But the sequel takes place 12 years after the events of Dune 1 and 2.
So are they just gonna disregard that timeline or wait a few years to film it?
I don't know. I believe it's in Children of Dune where Paul, spoiler alert, Paul Atreides' child, who he himself is like, no, I can actually bring the entire world peace. He merges with the sandworm. So I hope they make that movie. But anyway, going back to the Austin Butler planet, it's full S&M world. Like at one point I was Googling, did Clive Barker read Dune? Because it's a full Hellraiser planet. There's a man that works for Austin Butler, I guess, that gives him knives. And he's just in a latex crop top where his nipples are fully out.
Oh, very Rick Owens. Once they do the spinoff film that's just about that planet, I'll watch Dune.
You've at least seen a photo of what Austin Butler looks like in the film, right? He's bald.
I've been avoiding this whole Dune thing, Lauren. I'll Google it now.
Did you end up seeing Oppenheimer?
No, I don't. Oh, he's not even hot. That's so disappointing. Okay, I'm definitely not even seeing a movie about that planet. Gross. He looks like the guy from Powder.
Yeah, it is actually a planet full of powders. But Chelsea, that's a bald cap. Austin Butler didn't shave his head for that role.
Of course it's a bald cap. That's why it looks like powder. Hold on. What does this remind me of? I think there's like an extra in an REM video that looks like this.
It does feel like Michael Stipe should be on the Austin Butler planet.
You know how like in 90s alternative music videos, they always had some sort of like circus or freak show concept? I guess the Smashing Pumpkins went the hardest with that kind of shit. But like, this is what that reminds me of. Whoa. That's a vibe. Okay, I'm into that. More of that, please.
That's what I'm saying, though. Go to part two. That's where you get most of this. Now, having seen both parts, I will say I do like part two better. Right, you've seen the David Lynch one, and one of the problems with that is that he tried to put the entire first book into a movie, which is why a lot of it doesn't make any sense. The things that don't make sense in Denis Villeneuve's Dune is just because I believe the book is very weird.
And I believe you, based on all of this information that I'm non-consensually learning. But I'm sure there's so many fuckettes that are like, I've seen Dune. Yes, Lauren, fuck Chelsea.
All right, well, you saw something, Chelsea, that I didn't see.
Oh, yes. I saw Problemista, and you really should see it. Like, I will definitely never see Dune, but you should see Problemista. It's very good. If you guys haven't heard of this movie, it stars Tilda Swinton and Julio Torres, who wrote and directed it. And if you're not familiar, he had a really great HBO special called My Favorite Shapes that came out a while back. But he basically like plays this guy that's like an aspiring toy designer in New York City, and he gets fired, loses his work visa, and then he has to work for Tilda Swinton, who's like this crazed art critic, in the hopes that she will
sponsor his visa.
Yes, exactly. Watching it was very cathartic for me. Like, if you've ever worked for an insane creative person that like barely knows how to use technology, like, you will relate to this film. And of course, if you've ever experienced the United States immigration system, it will be cathartic for that reason as well.
Well, I've experienced one of those things and you've experienced the other, so
there you go. He has a really high taste level. Tilda Swinton was like crazy, very legit, like very good wig, very on point, like Izzy Miyake, Vivian Westwood type outfits on this woman. Highly recommend.
I feel like despite the fact that I'm pretty plugged in, like I didn't know that this film had come out. Like I know about this film, was looking forward to it.
Well, it's an A24 film, but I feel like they haven't gone as ham promoting it as they do for some other movies. Like I've been hearing about this goddamn Civil War movie for like 10,000 years. Like I want to see it, can't wait to see it.
Yeah, Paul was like, do we have to see that? And I was like,
don't you want to see that? Because I love movies like that.
I do. Because we saw a film in IMAX, they give you all the IMAX trailers. And so I was like, we don't need to see it in IMAX. But yeah, we need to see Alex Garland's Civil War for no other reason than to figure out what this brilliant man has written that Texas and California have come together against the United States.
Yeah, I just need to understand how that works and like what the rest of the Southwest is doing.
Also, Nick Offerman as the president, genius.
I'll watch Kirsten Dunst in literally anything.
Did you see the recent interview she did? I believe it's in promoting this film, where after Power of the Dog, she didn't work for 2 years. And I guess the interviewer brought that up. And she was like, yeah, because I was offered mom roles and I wasn't going to do that. She basically said no to everything.
It's so weird that all of the actresses that were like in the same age range as us when we grew up, maybe a little older, but now they're all playing women of a certain age roles. Like Chloe 70 is playing CZ Guest. That's wild to me.
My Roman Empire, and probably yours too, is the Bell Jar film that she was supposed to direct that never happened. Kirsten Dunst, by the way, not Chloe.
It's so crazy that that hasn't been made into a movie.
I assume because most financiers are men and they won't give a woman money to make that.
Okay, but Bell Jar is like a household name of books. Like you don't even have to be like an alt-girl Lana Del Rey fan to know what that book is. Like everyone of millennial age and older knows what that book is.
I guess it's more surprising that, because everything is a TV show, that that hasn't been made into a limited series.
I mean, it would be a hard book to adapt. It's been 10,000 years since I've read it.
They said Dune was unadaptable, and yet they did, Chelsea. We can do hard things.
Sydney Sweeney as Sylvia Plath. Now I'm obsessed with that. Millie Bobby Brown as Sylvia Plath.
Dude, we also need to see Immaculate. Sydney Sweeney, she auditioned for Immaculate 10 years ago, didn't get it. The film was shelved. She started to produce things, always remembered that script, decided to produce it herself, starred in it, and made a deeply weird nunsploitation film, which seems right up our alley.
I will literally see any nun thing regardless of quality.
That's next on the list. After I see Problemista, which I'm sure will give me flashbacks to the eccentric celebrity I worked for many years, who I made many a presentation and edited videos for.
It might be too hard for you then. Anyway, we should go.
We got to practice our live show. All right, guys, that does it for us. Don't forget to rabbit rabbit. That will happen before the next podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shit, I don't have the alarm set yet. I need to do that.
All right, well, Chelsea needs to go and set her rabbit rabbit alarm. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.